What was your first flight in the Jenny like, and how nerve-generating was it?
Well, you know, Jennies have a reputation of vibrating. I didn't know if it was me or the plane that was vibrating more. And these guys were there in that first flight. As anything, you're saying, will this thing fly? And it turns out where we were doing our flight testing was in a small runway that John had created between two taxiways and a small airport in Kentucky. At one end of the runway was a pond, and I've seen the movie The Great Waldo Pepper, and I know how Axel landed in the palm. So I was thinking about, well, will I land in the pond, or should I bring a life preserver with me? And then the other end, it sits on a plateau, is the mountain. So I had two choices of getting it off the ground and then of getting it back on the ground. It was either the pond or the mountain. But somehow, luck was with us. So
what was it like for you two on the ground watching what he just described?
Nervous. You watch it take off, and it starts to settle, and you think, oh, my goodness. And then it takes off. Then, you know, a few passes, and it gets on the ground, then you start to breathe again.
So does it fly better now than the Jenny than it did then?
Well, the Jenny has no aerodynamic stability, so you're constantly flying it, and you just have to get used to that. The one thing I did learn was I wasn't strong enough to fly the Jenny. I made it around the pattern three times, and they probably thought, oh, he's coming down earlier, or I think it'd stay up longer. No, it's because I couldn't hold the stick any longer. You have to realize as much as I like to think of myself as 18 or 19 or 20 or wished I could be there, like some other people here would probably say the same thing, is that they were built for young, athletic men. And strength wasn't a problem. They didn't have trim tabs originally, then they were added. And so the first thing I did once I got safely on the ground, I said, I need to begin a program I continue today. I do 50 push-ups every day, do arm, just so that you've got the strength if you need it. We have since we do a lot of cross-country flying, and I've got a really long cross-country over mountains coming up here in a few weeks, is that we have installed a trim tab in the John has, so we can trim it up a bit in the elevator.
Your push-up getting in shapes make you sound like Sean D. Tucker every day.
We don't do anything like Sean D. Tucker does. We're slow and
well,
slow.
Well, what altitude if you're going over the Rockies?
No, we're going to go over the Appalachians. The Suicide Alley. That's what the old mail pilots called it. Yeah,
they got lost. How much altitude?
Well, we'll try to get as high as we can, at least 1,000 feet over the mountains. You have to ask Gary. He was flying with me down to Maxwell, and we hit some of the mountains. How are those downdrafts, anyway?
I just want to
Gary,
grab him.
Gary, what was it like?
You know, where's the airplane going? You know, the wing drops, lose a couple hundred feet, and when you're flying at 700 or 800 feet, okay. You get it back, but it's she's got a mind of her own. You don't ever let go of her.
How effective was the plane in Europe in World War I?
This airplane?
Yeah.
Well, this airplane was really, I'm told by the historians that I've talked to, even though it came into the war late, it really accomplished a lot. It was one of the fastest airplanes, as big and bulky as this. You say, oh, Fokkers and Albatrosses, who you'll see this posed with, make sure you go over the World War I aviation after this. They'll just have their field day with it. They didn't. This was faster than those airplanes. Right. At that time, it was 125 miles an hour, and so there were certainly some of the later German planes that could keep up with it, but it really could get there. And because of the armament, we of course, you know, the British only put one gun on each, and the front and the back, and us being Americans, we have to be more aggressive and better, so we put two guns. So we got two 30 caliber guns, Lewis guns on the rear, and two Marlins for the pilot in the front.
So, all in all, what do you expect this plane to perform as, and what are you going to do with it once you get it up in the air?
Well, we built this really for one reason alone, and that's to pay tribute to American military aviation. So we're looking at the possibility of getting it to France. They're interested in it. This is depicting the 50th Aero Squadron, the colors on this airplane. and they were one of the squadrons that won the, or not won, but were awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. And it was number six that did it, and they were looking for the Lost Battalion, which many people have heard, and there's been books and things written. And these pilots had been shot at, and their plane, which was number two, not number six, barely made it back to the airfield, but they thought they found the battalion. So they talked to their CO and said, "We got to go again." Weather was bad, late afternoon. They climbed back in. Their last flight. Germans decimated them. They flew low. They were dropping. They found the battalion, and they were dropping supplies to them, which was one of the first air-to-ground supply missions, another first of this airplane.
Wow.
So our notion is to try to tell as many people as we can this story, and that, again, it represents the terrific courage that that the men and women of America have exhibited every time they've climbed into any kind of a cockpit to defend liberty.
So when you fly, and when, September, you hope?
Our test flight, that's when we're hoping to...
Test flight in September?
There's interest in getting it to Europe to fly that mission. It was based out of Remacourt on October 6th, that mission. And the town and the French officials are working hard. If anybody knows anybody at the Pentagon level that would like to help find us a C-5, or we'd even go with a C-130 to take it over. We could get it there. They'd like for us to fly that mission. The original field is as it was 100 years ago.
Really?
It's owned by the mayor of the town, and they're crazy about trying to get this thing back. And then, of course, it'd be great to be there to celebrate the armistice as well.
So when you first fly this, though, in Kentucky, yes?
Tennessee.
Winchester,
Tennessee.
Would you publicize that ahead of time, or you're going to do it pretty much on the hush-hush?
Well, we were thinking about lining up, working with Sofa Factory and lining up sofas all along the runway and selling seats, you know. If nothing else, it'll at least be fun that first flight.
And pay off part of the debt.
Maybe.
Right. So let's get a little more modern here. Bob, tell us about this airplane.
Well, the Skymaster, built by Cessna, is a military adaptation of a civilian airplane. During Vietnam War, the Air Force was using the O-1 as an observation airplane. The O-1 was a two-seat, single-engine airplane that really was not that much different than a Piper Cub. It had grown bigger and more complex, of course, but still relatively slow, with only one engine. And its job was to go out and find the enemy and communicate that location to the attack aircraft and artillery units and crews on the ground to be able to interact.
So they were forward air controllers.
They were like the conductor of the orchestra of battle.
Right.
They didn't play any of the instruments, if you will, but they told everybody else where to go and when. So the Air Force needed something faster, more survivable, and although what they wanted later turned into the OV-10 Bronco, it took a long time to design an airplane from a clean sheet of paper. They needed something now. So they turned to Cessna, and Cessna said, "Hey, we have this new civilian business airplane that we designed to compete with Piper's Seneca. Maybe you guys would be interested in it." So.
And about what year was this?
This was in about 1967. So the Air Force, for a couple of weeks, tried one of these civilian airplanes. They tried flying it. Hey, this is pretty neat. And they let's try it some more. So they set up a real evaluation of the Cessna Skymaster business airplane. And they said, "Yeah, we like this thing. We want to buy a bunch of them. But Cessna, we need you to make some changes." So they made a list of the things they wanted different. We want different systems in it. We want different radios. We want the ability to mount ordnance weapons on the aircraft. We need some more windows. We need this thing and that thing. They made a whole list of things. And Cessna said,
based on what the O-1 pilots had told them they needed.
Exactly, based on the mission requirements. So Cessna said, "Sure, we can do that." And the Air Force said, "Great, we'll call it the O-2A. And Cessna set about building them. And this is an example of an O-2A designed as a combat aircraft, a forward air control aircraft. It has hard points, pylons under the wings, that can carry offensive weaponry. Usually those were marking rockets, and the forward air controller would point the airplane at the enemy or a location that he wanted to point out to the fast-moving attack aircraft. He'd fire off a marking rocket, and then he had a suite of radios, so he could talk to the attack aircraft, he could talk to naval artillery, army artillery, whomever he needed to talk to, and he'd tell them to use his puff of smoke as a reference, hit my smoke, or hit 100 yards north or west of it, as the case may be, to direct their weapons onto target. So that was the role of the O2A. It was at the very point of the spear, finding the enemy, marking their location, and directing iron onto the target. And then after, it stuck around and assessed the damage that had been done, and it could photograph that damage, and also could be in charge of combat search and rescue should any other aircraft be down. He could direct the search and rescue activities. So that's, in a nutshell, what the O2A did.